Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to the American Overlander Podcast. I'm your host, Will Fowler with Venture to Rome. With me today in person, in the studio here at Venture to Rome worldwide headquarters, is my best buddy in the whole world, Chris from Frontier State Overland. Thanks for being here, dude.
You know what, Will? I had to like clear my schedule, man, but I'm glad to be here. It's totally worth it.
We had to get our booking agents involved to get you here, but I'm glad we finally got it worked out.
Yep. You know, I had to tell Taylor that, you know, I would catch up with her later.
Taylor Swift or Trailer Swift?
Yeah, Trailer Swift.
Which, by the way, Trailer Swift, if you haven't seen this video, we did a great three-part series, which we're about to launch as a full feature film on our trek across Oregon from east to west. And in that, there is a Jumpin' Jack trailer towed by our buddy Ryan on his basically stock JKU Rubicon. And about halfway through the trip, he decided to name the trailer Trailer Swift, which was brilliant, I think.
Yeah, but it's also kind of ironic because it was not Swift.
It was not Swift
at all. It was like so slow.
It's a cool trailer, but it ain't Swift.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's like a sweet setup, but anyway. Yeah.
So
not Swift.
Today, we are drinking something that is phenomenal. It is, I don't even know what to describe. I don't even know what the name of this thing is because it's not an old fashioned. It is some other concoction. Chris, like, tell me, because you're the one who made this stuff and it is like nothing I've ever had.
Okay, so like I stumbled on this recipe from this place in New York that they do a bacon washed bourbon.
So like, you got to go, you've piqued our interest. What does bacon washed bourbon mean?
Okay, so like there's this whole thing about like washing like alcohol with certain like fats basically. So our friends, Joel and Jacinda, like mutual friends, right? They introduced us to this with some gin, and it's like an olive oil washed gin. Hmm. So basically what you do though is you take some sort of like fat, whether it's gin or not, excuse me, gin is not a fat.
You can get fat from drinking too much gin, but it's not actually a fat.
Yeah. You know, this is, yeah, true story.
Ask me how I know.
You're not fat. But the thing is that you take some sort of fat and you introduce it to like an alcohol and leave it in there for like a day or two. And then you freeze it usually and then you skim the fat off. And it like leaves these kind of like certain like undertones, like flavor profiles.
And the texture, I think, actually.
Yeah, it does. Like, it creates like this kind of unusual like mouthfeel.
I hate the word mouthfeel.
Yes.
Like, we've got to come up with something else because the word mouthfeel just doesn't sound... It sounds like inappropriate.
It does. Yeah. So like if I said sopping wet, sopping moist mouthfeel.
Oh my God.
I would
podcast over. I quit.
Yeah. Game over.
But it does, it changes the texture of it.
Yeah.
And it has this kind of bacony infused kind of a hint. It's not super strong, but when you make an old fashioned with it, it's incredible. And my friend, you did not just make a bacon washed old fashioned. You put bacon in the old fashioned.
Yeah. So basically what you do is like you add some bacon fat to bourbon and then like you just like add it into the bottle. Or actually like in my case, I added it to like a large mason jar. And every time you walk past it, you shake it up, make sure that the bacon fat is like mixing into the bourbon. And then you strain it out using a coffee filter and it just like creates this like incredible, I don't know, as like kind of a savoriness, but it also kind of like mellows out the bourbon.
Oh yeah.
So like one of our favorites is this Koenig bourbon, mm-hmm. which is like from our area.
It's an Idaho distillery.
Yep. And it's wonderful just like on its own, but it's a little bit hot.
Yeah.
And so like when you add like this bacon fat to it and like leave it and... I've been doing it for like a couple of days, but honestly, we just did an experiment and did it for like, 4 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
And strained it out. And it just kind of like smooths it out. It's not nearly as hot. And so you just make an old fashioned, very similar to how you would.
But it's got this bacon washed bourbon in it. And then we took the bacon that you cooked to make the bacon fat. And we like pulverized it.
Yeah.
Into little teeny tiny bacon bits. And then you sprinkled bacon bits into the drink itself. And it's, if you like like a maple bar with bacon on it, like this is kind of what that is, except for it's a drink.
Yeah. And the thing that though is that you don't, you can make it like sweet if you want it to, but I don't know. Will and I, we tend to like enjoy the taste of bourbon.
Yeah.
And so we're not trying to cover it up. And so something that we do is I just add, I don't know, maybe a quarter of an ounce of, instead of simple syrup, I use this bourbon barrel aged maple syrup.
Maple syrup. Thank you, David Jenkins from Off the Grind.
Yep.
David Jenkins from Off the Grind, who started doing this. He went up to Canada and he used maple syrup up there to make old fashions. And we were like, that's brilliant. So now we've adopted that.
It is. Yeah. I don't use simple syrup anymore.
Yeah.
I use maple syrup, or in this case, bourbon barrel aged maple syrup.
It all goes together. It just goes together so well.
It's amazing. And so, basically 3 ounces of this bacon wash bourbon, quarter ounce of, bourbon, aged maple syrup, bunch of bitters, a little bit of orange peel, and then you can either rim the glass with like
another word I do not like.
Glass.
Rim the glass.
Yeah.
I just feel like if you Googled that term, it would come up with some really, really uncomfortable results.
Yeah, like something from Holland.
Depending on your preferences, yeah. Something from Belgium you just don't want to see.
Well, yeah, I've never been to Belgium or Holland. So, you know.
So, so you would think that we were a cocktail show by our conversation. However, this is not a cocktail show. This is actually an overlanding show, but we do like to have nice craft cocktails when we're recording this podcast, which is why I have just been kind of gushing over this particular cocktail because it is my favorite for all time and eternity. Like, I've never had anything that I like better than this. No Sazeracs, no other old fashions. Sorry, David Jenkins. This one, you're not bacon washing your bourbon, buddy. Start doing that, you might be back in the game. I mean, I don't know. It's just so good. So that's why we're talking about this and gushing about it, because it's something that you kind of have taken and run with. Like, this is kind of like your recipe, Chris.
Yeah, the thing that's fun is like you just had like a meetup and I made this. And people were expecting not to like it. When people hear bacon washed bourbon, they hear that there's bacon fat in there.
Yeah.
And you strain it out and all that stuff. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but they tend to just be like, okay, I'll try one just to be polite. And then it was funny because like within 10 minutes, the entire bottle was gone.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of that, I had my first ever Patreon and subscriber, it wasn't only Patreon, camp out where people from all over the region came to camp out with me and you. And it was absolutely incredible. I was super nervous about it. I did not know what to expect. I've never done one of these. We get asked all the time, can we go with you on a run? Can we go camping with you? And the answer is always no. The answer is no, because for lots of reasons. And I've gone into that in previous podcasts, but like the answer is always no. No, you can't come with us. And it's not because we don't think you're cool or like you. It's because we don't know you. And that's not how we roll. Like, we don't go overlanding with strangers. We overland. We have a really small, tight crew. And that's how we like to do it. Just like lots of other people out there. I'm sure you can relate to that. But then there are people out there who want to have a tight crew, but don't have one. Right. And some of them are watching our videos and they are kind of becoming part of our crew through watching our videos.
Yeah. Like kind of a crew by proxy.
Yes. And that's a wonderful, awesome, amazing thing.
Yeah.
And yet we don't know them. Right. So the reason that we started thinking about doing these camp out weekends is so we can get to know them more, have an opportunity for those people who are looking for community to have it. And since, you know, in some cases, they are finding community through the videos that we're putting out there, we can leverage that to have a real in-person encounter with them that is not the same as them coming with us on our family vacations when we're, you know, when we're doing these overlanding trips. So we had this camp out weekend and everything went wrong from day one and then everything went right. So let me explain what I mean. Chris, you and I have been talking about doing something like this for at least 18 months.
Oh yeah. Yeah. At least 18 months. And throwing out like all sorts of different ideas, like everything, like where do we go? Like where can we go that will like sustain like that many people?
Yeah.
And so like, well, our minds,
that many people is not like, we didn't really know.
Well, no, but
right?
I mean, we're
like, okay, if you're gonna have a group that like our group, five rigs is a lot for us. Usually exactly. It's like two, three, maybe four.
Yeah. So like, exactly. I would say like three is usually the number of rigs that we have. And so we're thinking like, okay. And just from like watching videos from other folks, like we're seeing folks that they're like, oh, okay, I expected like there'd be five rigs, and they have like 15 rigs show up.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And so it's one of those things where you have to kind of like plan for the best, but prepare for the worst. I don't know if that's
kind of. I mean, well, you know, we're just thinking about like where would we go, and of course we're Boise boys, so we love the Owyhees. We love, you know, all the national forests that we have in the other direction. And so you and I have been kind of brainstorming like where are we going to do this thing, and we thought, okay, we know the Owyhees pretty well because we've been out there a lot. There's some spaces out there. So we kind of talked through it, and this was kind of like, you know, campfire conversations, bourbon conversations, when we're trying to kick around ideas for where to have one of these and what they might be, what that experience might be for us. Cause we didn't know.
Well, the other thing is too, is that like, if somebody's going to come and like hang out with us, you also want to make it memorable. You just want to like phone it in and like be like, okay, let's go to the spot where everybody else goes.
Right. Let's go to a campground someplace. Like, no, let's do something cool. So we had a short list of places. And then in August, we went down to watch a meteor shower at Birch Creek Ranch in the Owyhees. And Birch Creek Ranch is a wonderful, beautiful place. It's a known place. So I don't mind mentioning it because it's not like it's a secret. It's right along the Owyhee River. There was an old Virginian he's old to me, a Virginian transplant and a Basque transplant that decided to kind of do two co-op farms down there together along the river. They had sheep and different things. And it was a working ranch. I think that the Basque guy died. He fell off his wagon or something, got run over the wagon, and like just a terrible, awful story where he like pulled himself with his arms like 3 miles or something.
Oh my god! Really?
Oh yeah, this is.
I need to look at the story. This is horrible.
It's an incredible story. And the Virginian kept the property. You know, after they passed away, they went through a couple owners, and then eventually, the National Forest Service picked it up and has been preserving it. And they actually have people stationed there during the warmer months. And it's just a beautiful place. It's just a great, beautiful place. You're down there, right on the river.
And like the elevation is actually really low too.
That's right. Yeah, because you drop so far down, so you lose about 2,000 feet of elevation to get down to the river. And you have probably, I'm guessing, they're somewhere between maybe 500 foot and 800 foot cliffs that are kind of all around you.
And a bunch of water crossings as you're like going in. It's like one of those things that's just like very quintessential Owyhees.
Yeah, and fun. It's not hard.
No, like it's not hard at all.
It's an easy, fun drive.
Yeah.
Especially if you have like a reasonably well-built rig. So we went down there to watch the meteor shower, and I was towing a trailer because I was shooting this video on this trailer that I had for a couple weeks.
We almost stepped on a rattlesnake.
We almost stepped on a rattlesnake. That's right, yeah. So when we were down there like... this is August, right? So everything is fully grown. All of the grass is fully grown and starting to die. The trails generally have a lot of weeds growing up in the middle of the trails.
We're talking like weeds that are like 4 feet tall.
Yeah, very, very. It's very, everything is very grown out down there. So actually finding a camp spot can be a little tricky because the grass is so high. And there's, you know, grasshoppers everywhere and bugs, and you know, August is not the best time to be down there, in my opinion. I think the best time to be down there is like November or like March.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, so we were down there in August, and we're kind of scouting around for maybe a little bit better campsite than the one we had. And you like walked down this overgrown path down to this other campsite.
Yeah,
and
no problem.
And then you walked back, and I don't know what I was doing. I was doing. I don't know, probably some of the cameras. I mean, you came back and you're like, hey, there's this other place down there. We might want to consider camping down there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And well, I think like maybe you were like filming the intro to your to the trailer
right.
video.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, I had no problem. And this is like literally, I walked down there, walked back, said, "Hey, Will, you want to walk down there?" He's like, "Yeah." And when you turn around, and this is like within the space of like, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Yeah. Easy. Yeah. If that.
Yeah. And we start walking and we get like, I don't know, maybe 12 feet into like this trail where the weeds and stuff are just like overgrown. And what do we hear?
Baby rattle and a big ass baby rattle. It's so big. The entire bush is shaking.
Yeah.
And you know, we grew up out here. So like you and I know that sound, we know what to do. It's still startling when you hear it.
Yeah.
And so it was like, stop. And like, it's so funny because like we were so in sync. Like we both went, yep.
Yeah, there's like no doubt.
Yep.
We didn't have to like, ask, did you hear that? It was just like, yep. Nope. There was zero doubt. Yeah. That's a rattler.
That's all we said. I was like, yep. Okay. And we just, you know, so if you come across a rattlesnake that you can see or that you can't see, what you do is you stop. Number one, stop yep. where you are, identify where the rattlesnake is, and then give it space because they're not out there to bite you. They are protecting themselves. That's what it's a protection mechanism. And so they're not hunting you or anything like that. But when you hear a rattlesnake, stop, back up, depending on where it is, or walk to the side or whatever, identify where the snake is, give a lot of space. And chances are, and as we found out, if you just give it a little bit of space and a little bit of time, it's going to leave.
Yeah.
Because it does not,
a warning.
It doesn't want to be, it wants to be safe itself and it doesn't know if it's in danger or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually walked back and we got all the kids because we wanted them to hear what a rattlesnake rattle sounds like. We're like, hey kids, we found a rattlesnake in a bush. We're not going to do anything to it, but you need to hear this sound because not all of them have heard it. My kids have never heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we walk back and then maybe this is a minute and a half later. We got everybody back and we kind of rolled a rock into the bush to see if it would rattle again and it was gone.
Oh yeah. Like we were throwing rocks like in the whole like area.
Yeah.
And there was nothing. Like there was no sound.
It was gone. We could have walked down the path at that point, but we were like, meh.
Yeah. Honestly, it kind of rattled us a little bit.
literally
rattled us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but I mean, the thing is that this trail was like so overgrown and, right behind us comes like a Jeep club from like,
oh my,
Sherwood, Atlanta. Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah. 18 Jeeps. So this is the beginning of my fear of doing a Patreon campout weekend because here we are at Birch Creek Ranch and 18 rigs roll up on us. And it looked like a never ending line of rigs.
Yeah. 18 doesn't sound like a big number. But when you're like looking at rigs, and it wasn't just like Jeeps, they had Toyotas and some other stuff too. And it was like, it just kept coming.
Yeah.
And then trying to find a spot for that many people.
Oh my gosh.
And Birch Creek Ranch has like an airstrip, right? In the middle.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's an airstrip. I'm not sure what it is. I thought it was an airstrip, but I've been corrected on that in the comment section many times. So who knows? It's got a field. It's an open flat field.
Yeah. And it's long.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could see like it either being, it, I mean, anyway, so it's the big field and it's got like a pivot there and stuff. And so mm-hmm. like these folks ended up, they were in there super nice.
When you say pivot, you mean pivot irrigation.
Pivot irrigation.
Yeah. So there's like there's basically, they water it.
Yeah. There. Sorry. I guess I just assume everyone knows what a pivot is, mm-hmm. but you're right. Pivot irrigation, like right there. And, these folks, super nice, by the way, come in like very respectful and kind. And they were, I think from Sherwood, Oregon.
Yes. Yeah. The Portland area.
Yeah. And so they come in, they kind of stake out the spot and we're like, Will and I are just kind of watching and kind of back to the whole Patreon thing. We're like, oh, okay. So there's like 18 of these rigs. They are taking up a lot of space.
Oh my gosh.
Like that is a lot of room.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't go into like that. There were some issues with how that particular group set up camp that night. I think in terms of like, leave no trace, you know what I mean? Which is more concern that I had, more and more concern that as I'm thinking about what we're going to do. So long story short, we leave that weekend and on the way out, you and Elsha drive over and scout out this kind of offshoot mm-hmm. Down there on Birch Creek Ranch and found a big wide open space that could handle, we thought, like 12 to 15 rigs.
Oh yeah, at least.
So my original plan on this campout was like, okay, let's make sure we have enough space. Let's have a beautiful place. Everyone will remember a nice fun drive down there. That's not too technical, but you know, fun.
Yeah, and you can do like in a stock rig.
You could do probably in a stock rig.
Yeah.
And that would be the campout weekend. So then I'm like, okay, great. I'm going to go see if people want to do this. So I go to my Patreon account. By the way, if you're not a Patreon supporter and you're listening to this podcast,
stop being
right
a cheapskate.
I have a wonderful Patreon community. It is very inexpensive if you want to join. It's $3 a month. And you get behind the scenes access. You get a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun. You get kind of upcoming announcements on things that are happening first. You get first dibs on things like campouts and all that. And it's just a cool group of people. So if you're not a Patreon supporter, I would love if you became a Patreon supporter after listening to this podcast. In any case, I went back to that group and I said, hey, I'm going to do this thing. Who wants to go? And Patreon is not like Facebook or Instagram or YouTube when you post something and like thousands of people see it and respond to it right away. Patreon is, it's a much more, I don't know, secluded corner of social media because it's pay gated for the most part. So it takes a few days sometimes for everyone to kind of like look at it and respond. And, and I can't remember how many people said that they were in, or were interested. And I thought, okay, well, this is great. We have, I don't know how many people, let's say like, you know, some like eight people on Patreon wanted to come to a camp out. I also wanted to open it up to subscribers that were not Patreon members this time. Because I keep getting requests for people who want to go camping. And I'm like, and I've told them, oh, we're going to do a camp out at some point, subscriber camp out. So I was like, okay, I'm going to keep my integrity. I'm going to open it up to subscribers. And I posted, hey, this is the sign up link to do our first ever, we called it Rendezvous in the Owyhees originally, Rendezvous in the Owyhees. And I had it up for less than a day, and the list filled up. Like, it filled up so fast. It got to like, I don't know what it was, maybe a 20 or so.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking in my brain, like, I know what 18 rigs looks like, and it's massive. Mm-hmm. And so I shut it down. I took the link off. I closed everything down, and I edited the post on YouTube to say like, hey, this is full now. And then what happened is people joined Patreon because it was still open to Patreon members. Like, I was like, look, you guys are basically like, you're my homies.
Yeah.
You guys can go. Like, you're in if you want to go. Just tell me you're in and you're in. I'll make room for you. We'll figure it out. And so then people were coming over to Patreon and getting and signing up to go on the camping weekend, which is wonderful. It's wonderful. And then I had this problem in my own mind. This is like where everything started to go wrong. I counted up the rigs, and it was like 27 rigs that were going to be there. And I was like, that's 10 more rigs than we saw, you know, roughly. And
well, and 27, I mean, 27 is, it's not a big number, but the thing is that you're talking like 27, like rigs, and each one of those rigs has like, you know, two people and stuff. It just snowballs.
And they all have tents and tables and ovens. And I mean, this, you know, you think about the camp setup, it's massive.
Well, yeah. You're trying to like find a place to accommodate 27 rigs. Like that is rough. That is really hard to find.
Yeah. So I started panicking. I can be a bit of a procrastinator, and there's two reasons for that. One, I probably do my best work under pressure. Two, I, have learned to wait sometimes, because sometimes just waiting, problems can kind of work themselves out instead of just me jumping in and ruining it. And so I waited and then I waited and I waited, and I kept trying to think, what am I going to do here? I don't know. I'll figure it out. And it was a super like frenetically charged time between our trip down to Birch Creek Ranch and this Patreon campout, because I'm like doing all this crazy stuff. I'm going out to the East Coast to do Overland Expo East and all this stuff. And I'm just trying to figure this out. People are like texting me and messaging me like, what's going on with the camping weekend? And I'm like, oh my God.
Well, so, like Lance and I are like headed out into the Waihees to try and find a spot to try and accommodate that number of people.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You guys went out on a scouting run.
Yeah. Like, so we found a couple of spots that like could fit, I don't know, maybe 15 people, but like if you're looking at 27 people,
yeah.
I mean, that is
27 rigs.
That is a, yeah, 27 yeah. rigs. Sorry. That is a lot of space.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a lot of real estate.
So I do know one place that can accommodate that much, that many people. And it's called the Elver Desert. It's I think like 12 miles long by 8 miles wide. And it's a flat playa, ancient lake bed, and you can camp on it. And so I was like, well, I think I'm going to move it to the Elver Desert. And you were like, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that is a great idea. Okay. That's what we're going to do.
There's so much room out there.
There's so much room. And I didn't think of anything else except for how smart I was for figuring it out. And so I sent out an update to everyone that was going, hey, we're moving it to the Elver Playa, lots of space. And it's an epic, awesome location. Like it's every bit as memorable as Birch Creek Ranch. And in some cases, maybe more memorable.
Oh yeah. Like Sean from Story Till Now and like a lot of the Canadian guys, like they'll cruise, like, you know, Casey and stuff, like they'll like cruise down just to go to the Elver Desert.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really cool place.
It's really unique.
Yeah. It's a flat lake bed in the middle of the desert. It's at the end of a triple rain shadow. It's got almost 10,000 foot mountain, the Steens Mountain.
Yeah. Highest drivable spot in Oregon.
Yeah. 9,700 feet. Looking down on it, it's 5,000 feet above the playa.
Yeah.
So it's almost a full mile above the playa.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's just beautiful. So like the mountain will have snow on it and the desert will be 75 degrees down below. It's just a crazy place. So, anyway, I'm super impressed with myself. And then I find out, this is like fail number three at this point. I find out that the eclipse is happening the same weekend that we have planned to do this Patreon campout. And I start looking around. Somebody messaged me like, hey, I see that you're doing this at the Elver Desert. Have you read up on the eclipse that's happening that weekend? And I was like, oh, I don't really care about eclipses. So no. And they're like, well, take a look at this Facebook post. And so I went to like Oregon Overlanders and Pacific Northwest Overlanders. And there were a couple posts on the Elver Desert where people were saying, we're hosting a big event out there, and they're expecting 25,000 to 30,000 people out on the playa. and then, so, you know, I got whiff of this. People who signed up for the trip got whiff of this. And then I start getting these concerned emails from people who had signed up to go. Like, hey, Will, did you know about all the people who are going to be out there? Like, it's going to be insane. Like, there's only two gas stations, you know, within like 90 miles. And so if you can't get gas in one of those places, you got a big problem on your hand. And Field Station, which is the closest gas station to the Elver Desert, only has so many gallons of gas, right? And so it was like, well, if there's a long line for gas and, you know, all these kind of like disaster scenarios people are playing out.
Yeah, people are freaking out.
Yeah. And so was I at this point. Yeah. So I called up Field Station, talked to them, and I was like, what is going on out there? And they're like, we don't know. And I was like, is the playa, it had been raining a lot and everyone was worried about mud out there. I was like, is the playa like dry? And they're like, we don't know. It's like 25 miles from here. I don't know. And I'm like, well, that's not helpful. I was like, what do you think? Is there going to be a ton of people coming out there? And they're like, well, we don't know what to expect. Like, we've heard lots of stuff. Our hope is that there's not a bunch of a-holes. That's it.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what, from your perspective, that's totally fair.
Yeah.
So, I did a little bit more research and I came to my own conclusion that there was no way on God's green earth that 30,000 people were going to go out to the Elver Playa because it wasn't in the line of like the full 100% eclipse. Mm-hmm. And it was scheduled to be overcast and there's just no way.
Yeah. Everything like just wasn't lining up.
Right. So I decided to hold it at Alvord. And about 2 days before the camp out, I started getting notices from people that they weren't coming. And if you're listening to this and you're one of those people who said you weren't coming, I don't mean this personally in any way, but every time someone said they weren't coming, I was like, yes, yes.
A little bit less like pressure.
Yeah. Because I was so worried about that big of a group for my first time that, there are people that I really wish would have come, that couldn't come, and they had, really good reasons for not being there. But it started to make me feel a little bit better. It was going to be a little bit more of a manageable weekend. And so, the last thing that really freaked me out was it had been raining and raining and raining and raining and raining, and the Alvord Playa muddy is impossible.
Oh yeah. Like there's stories about people that get out there and they get stuck in a rainstorm and they just have to leave their rig out there until it dries out.
Yeah. They literally have to wait for it to dry.
Like you can't drive a tractor out there or anything, cause that tractor is going to get bogged down too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real nasty place if it's wet, and it had been raining, and that week it had rained. Mm-hmm. So the campout was, starting on Friday, and I think it was Tuesday, Wednesday, it had rained and it sprinkled a little bit on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh my God, is it going to be wet out there? What's going to happen? And it's not like I could text the GPS coordinates to people ahead of time. I had to go find a place on the playa that wasn't taken and then text the GPS coordinates. So I decided to drive out on Thursday night. I think I left at 7 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I got to the playa at, 11 PM or something like that. And,
so we were driving across it in the dark.
I was driving out there in the dark, in the pitch dark. And it is an unfriendly place to drive at night.
Yeah. And if you drive through the Alvord Desert or whatever playa in the middle of the night, your headlights, there is nothing for them to shine on.
Yeah.
It's just you get these little crystals floating through the air and you're just driving along and it is such a mind trip.
It totally is.
Where am I? You have nothing to orient you. We have nothing to say, I am going the right direction.
Yeah.
I mean, other than it's the closest like flying where you have
it's almost three dimensional.
Yeah. You have your instruments that are saying, I'm going east or west or whatever.
That's right. Yeah. But you use your GPS map.
Yeah.
And that's how you know where you're going because you can't see anything but there's no landmarks.
But then there's people that camp in the middle of the playa.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got to constantly look up to see if you're going to run over anybody.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I get there at night and I camp. I actually hooked up with somebody who had driven from Sacramento, to come hang out with me that weekend. And we hung out for a bit and then went to sleep, got up the next morning and I drove the playa a bit just to make sure that the it was dry and it was in great shape. Mm-hmm. So we dodged that bullet. And then the question is on the playa, where do you camp? Because it's windy a lot out there on the playa. Like we've experienced some pretty bad wind out there, Chris. And so if you camp closer to the mountain, closer to on the Steen side of the playa, there's less wind. And that's just because you're closer to the mountain and the wind is generally coming off the mountain. Mm-hmm. If you camp across the playa, on the far side of the playa, you get the best view of the mountain, but you risk it being windy. So I had looked at the forecast, looked at the radars, and it looked like it was going to be pretty still. And so I risked it and found a spot over on the far side of the playa, looking back at Steen's. And this is where the stars literally aligned. So all this stress, all these fails in my mind led up to this moment where I found the spot. I texted it or emailed it out to everybody who was coming and people started arriving and it was incredible. Like we had an incredible spot looking at all of Steen's.
Yeah.
Like we had the best angle on this massive mountain that was snow capped.
I was going to say
the snows that had happened the day before.
Yeah. I was going to say it had just happened. Like the snow on the Steen's was just it was just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yep. And so people started showing up, people that I had never met in person before. A few of them I had, but people I had never met in person before. And you came in Friday night.
Yeah.
So I was around kind of all Friday as people kind of were rolling in. meeting everybody, and there's this weird moment, you know, when someone has signed up to go on a camp out and you pick a spot, some random place off grid or almost off grid. And they drive up, you've never met them before, and they basically say, "Hey, we're here for the camp out." And it's like, "Oh, you're here to meet that stupid YouTube guy and spend the weekend camping out." Okay. And it's like, we're strangers, but we all have something in common as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I went from thinking I'm the common denominator to thinking I'm just the catalyst, because I wasn't the common denominator. Like, we didn't sit around all weekend and talk about my videos. Like, we didn't do that at all, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, they came up a couple times, but it was few and far between. We were just like-minded people coming together. The thing that we had in common was a love for overlanding and a love for being outdoors.
You were definitely kind of a bridge, a way to connect people that had that common interest.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool. Like, people were walking around and checking out each other's rigs. And like, even though they're dissimilar, like, you had people like with like Nissans and Toyotas and of course Jeeps and stuff. Like, there's like such a great,
diesel Fords.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah. Super Duty.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they were like, just their rigs couldn't have been like more different, but you walk around as you talk to these folks and they all had like different solutions for different things that, could apply like kind of across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And plus there was just that common, like, you know, desire to like just get out there,
mm-hmm,
and to see the world and to, you know, explore areas where other people weren't.
And what I found was with this group, is that they found community together among strangers, which was so cool because, you know, we talk about the negatives on social media, and social media can be a very negative place if you let it. But the reason that we open up Instagram or Facebook or YouTube and we scroll through those pictures and videos and things that are overlanding focused is because we're actually looking for community, right? We're looking for the thing in common, the thing that we want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have it, some people don't. And some people are seeking it and some people are not. You know, some people have it and they're not seeking it. Some people have it and they are seeking it. Some people don't have it and they are seeking it.
Yeah.
And so, and there's people who don't have it and are not seeking it. So there's those. I covered all my bases there. But
I think you missed one.
What's that?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot. But these folks were looking for whatever reason. And found it. Like, I really felt like we had this really cool weekend of strangers coming together. And like, the group from the very first second was totally at ease with everybody.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that was like one of the biggest takeaways I took.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, but when I got there, like, I pull in kind of late and, there's this guy, Brandon, and his family that came. And he's got like this amazing meal,
yeah,
like cooked up and everything. And he, like, I get out of the Pixie because I wasn't able to take Ripley. But anyway, I get out and I'm walking in. I'm just kind of getting my bearings. And he like shows up. He's like, "Hey, here's this plate of food."
Yeah,
and it was like this amazing like barbecue and stuff. And
I was like, it was like sweet ribs or something like
that. Yeah, like sticky finger ribs. I think they said, and like this amazing like big potato and stuff. I'm like,
they've been marinating the ribs for like, you know, 3 days or something like that.
Yeah, it was like spectacular. And I was like, it was funny because like just like a few hours earlier, like, I don't know, not even a few hours, but like an hour earlier, I'd like, okay, if when I'm in like Jordan Valley, should I just like grab a corn dog, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I was like hungry. And so I get here and I have like this gourmet meal. And then, you know, I go and like I sit down and I'm just hanging out with everybody and like talking. And these are people that have never met each other.
Yeah.
But they're like connected through a couple of things. One, you know, of course, through your videos, mm-hmm, because that's, you know, of course, how they got there. But they're also connected through their joy of overlanding.
Mm-hmm.
And also
more so that.
Yeah, I think, and I agree. Like, there's like this joy of like just getting out there.
Yeah.
And just like talking to people, like, again, with like different rigs from different like places, like all, I mean, and they were from all over the place.
Yeah.
Like you have people, from like Canada, mm-hmm. all the way down to like California yep. and everywhere in between.
Yep. Yeah.
And so, and like the ages were like really different. So, but anyway, long story short, like I'm sitting there eating these like delicious meal. And I'm kind of like trying to figure out like, okay, where I fit into this. And people are talking and I'm like, oh yeah, I fit into this because we all share this love for, you know, getting out there mm-hmm. and exploring.
Yeah.
And, you know, working on our rigs. Like I think everybody like had done stuff to their own rigs.
Yeah.
And were familiar with them. And it was just I went in there from like feeling like this anxiety about, I don't know any of these people. And you know me, I'm a kind of an introvert mm-hmm. to like, holy crap. Like these are my people. And like the only time I really felt that was like at Overland Expo.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree, man. And so we had a thing. So the first night we got to know each other a little bit. Second day we went for a little run. We wanted to go to some place. We had to turn around because of private property. It's a little weird out there in southeastern Oregon. We came back, we went to go get shakes and burgers and things at Fields and came back to camp. Just had kind of an easy early night. And then that night we had a potluck. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, like bring something. And not everybody did, but most people did.
Yeah.
It was so cool to see what people brought and to just have that sharing experience. It's one thing to sit under a campfire and kind of talk and chat. It's another thing to say like, hey, I made this for you.
Yeah.
Like, I hope you enjoy it. And this is why I love potlucks, especially when it's strangers, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, what did you bring? Where are you from? What is this recipe? You know, and people bring things that some people really want to impress everybody else. People just like bring things that just to get by, you know, just to say that they did it. That's me. Like I brought chips.
I was just going to say, by the way, that's Will. Yeah. By the way, I don't know what those chips were, but they were delicious.
Yes.
Yeah. They were really good chips. And I was like, oh, Will just brought chips. Come on. And like, I ate some of them. I was like, these are really good chips.
Kettle chips, Arbanero, something. Yeah, they were super good.
Yeah.
But not as good as like the homemade like chicken, buffalo chicken dip.
The chicken pot pie.
Chicken pot pie. Oh my gosh, the chicken pot pie was amazing.
Yeah.
The stuffed peppers, poblano peppers or Anaheim peppers. There was some like incredible pasta salads. There was two pasta salads. There was, I think, there's somebody who brought like granola bars and cheese curds, which was still really good.
I missed that one.
Just, yeah, it was.
Good cheese curds.
And
by the way, there was a shrimp curry.
A shrimp curry made by someone named Cruz, which was also very delicious. So I just loved it. I just loved the potluck thing because we were all sharing together and we had a really fun time around the fire that night. And then the next morning, I think we all left, you know, in the early morning or you know, mid morning, 9, 10 o'clock or something like that. Everybody kind of headed out to back where they're from. And it wound up being just like a really, really great weekend. So all of these things that like I initially really felt like I failed at, wound up being a really winning weekend. And it wasn't winning, you know, for me, it's like, there's nothing for me to gain from the weekend except meeting these people, you know, and, mm-hmm. and forming a community of my own, of, you know, a shared, but like a new community that I didn't have before.
Yeah.
Cause there's this online community, which is all about the comments.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's real in-person community, which is only about people that you spend time with.
Yeah.
And so for me, the only thing I had to gain was that. And I really did. I really gained a sense of who these people are and that there is a community out there that wants to come together, that wants to have weekends like this, that are not just lone wolves. You know, like I consider us to be kind of lone wolves. Like we keep it pretty tight.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's fun to go have these weekends. So I will say that we will do more of these. I think from here on out, we'll probably make it Patreon only. I think that, you know, a group of 10 to 15 is the right size for a weekend like that. And I think Patreon's probably the best place to make sure that the group stays that size. And the folks there are already kind of engaged in a different type of community. So it seems like the best fit. If you're listening to this and you're looking to do a Venture to Rome weekend, we're definitely going to do more of those this next year in 2024. We're going to have a spring and a fall. And if you want more information on that, I'm sure you'll see it. I will be posting all about it. In the, you know, as we get closer to that, as Chris and I figure out where that's going to be in the spring, maybe a hot springs. Oh, every time we say hot springs, it's like, we never go. Like, yeah. I mean, we've ever actually gone to a hot springs, even though we said we're going to go to a hot springs like 100 times.
Yeah.
It's like a surefire way to know that we're not actually going to go to a hot springs. But yeah. I know Atlanta has some nice big hot springs up there, and mm-hmm. you know, Boise River, there's, you know, the Three Forks of the Boise River have hot springs along them. So I don't know. Or we could go back out to Alvord too. Alvord's an incredible place. Or maybe even if it's a small enough group, go out to Birch Creek Ranch or some other place in the Owyhees. Like in the spring, it's a little easier because the grass isn't so high.
Yeah. But I like the hot springs idea too. That's a lot of fun.
I mean, say that.
I know. I feel like though, it's like, is the time due? I don't know.
Then there's this moment though, where you're like, now I'm going to take off my clothes and go sit in hot water with a bunch of dudes. And it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Well, you know, and honestly too, like, to be fair, we have a friend that we went overlanding with like for the first time, and he's like, hey, there's this great hot springs. And we went there.
And it was, yeah.
But the thing is that it could have been a hot, awesome hot springs.
It was terrible.
It was terrible, but it was also like right after 4th of July weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so.
It wasn't his fault they were terrible.
But. Yeah. No, it totally wasn't his fault. And I feel like it just like got hammered through that weekend. And so we were just like, we got there and we got kind of like the leavings.
They were like skin cells floating around. Oh my God. It was the worst, man.
Yeah, it was. It was. But I could see where like on a less used weekend, maybe it could be like awesome. I don't know. Maybe that's just me being like a Pollyanna, you know?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, that might be. You're not wrong.
Anyway, it was a really awesome weekend. I can't wait to do another one. I think there's a lot more we can do. I learned a lot.
Yeah. And I have a real like suggestion for you that I think may be a game changer.
Okay.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Balloons.
Really?
Balloons. Yeah, you need balloons.
Like helium balloons?
Yeah. Or just regular balloons. You can get there and blow them
just
up.
Just balloons. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great, you know what? That's brilliant.
You need lots of balloons.
I can't believe you're not in a event planning business.
You know, I think I'm pretty mediocre.
Anyway. So if you're listening to this podcast and you made it this far, please consider subscribing to the podcast. And if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't checked out our YouTube channel, Venture to Rome, please go check it out and watch some videos. And if you like those, subscribe there too. So thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Will from Venture to Rome, here with Chris from Frontier State Overland. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.